Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Yo, technology, what is it all about?
Hello and welcome to Danny in the Valley, your weekly dispatch from behind the scenes and inside the minds of the top people in tech. How are you all doing? I'm good. I'm here. I'm back for another week. And this week, we're talking flying cars because why not? I mean, where else are you going to get this array of subjects? Last week, we had the world's first beverage printer. Week before that, we were talking designer babies. Then it was quantum computing, big tech crackdown, burgers made out of mushroom roots. And this was all just like in the last month. So I do really try hard to keep it lively, keep it interesting for you all, keep it surprising. So I ask, just before we get going today, take a moment, please give a rating, give a review. It's always a huge help. It helps other folks find the show. Thank you. But now, as I said, flying cars. So, longtime listeners will be well aware of the previous episodes we have done on air taxis, flying cars, whatever you want to call them. There's a whole bunch of companies and they're all very different, but they have a couple things in common. They are typically very, very well funded. This is an expensive business. They're developing electric vehicles, so they're not powered by jet fuel or petrol, and they're also typically taking off vertically and landing vertically like a helicopter, all of which is going toward this goal of creating a whole new kind of intra-city, clean, quiet travel infrastructure, travel experience. There's literally been billions and billions of dollars thrown at this in the last, you know, 5-7 years, which is why I was intrigued by what this week's guest is up to. Patrick Hessel is the chief executive of Aeromobile, which is another flying car startup. They're based in Slovakia, and that's not the only reason it's different, because what they have built is actually a flying car. Like, you can drive this car to work, stop at McDonald's drive-thru, get a sausage McMuffin, my personal favorite, then drive to your local commuter airport, drive right onto the airstrip, hit a button, the wings come out, the propeller unfurls, your car becomes a plane, and you take off. It is honestly a pretty wild concept. And so when the company got in touch and said this is what they were up to, they're in America, I have to admit, I really just wanted to meet them and ask them one question. Why? Like, why do we actually need a flying car? Do we need a flying car? What problem is it solving? And why is Aeromobile all the way over from here in the first place in Silicon Valley? So I had all these questions, so I headed over to the Hiller Aviation Museum in San Carlos. It's a little museum that was founded by Stanley Hiller back in the 90s. Hiller is a pioneer of helicopters. So I could go over there and check out the Aeromobile prototype, which was right there in the foyer. So this is where we start this week, right in the foyer of the Hiller Museum with the Aeromobile prototype flying car. And what you'll hear first are some some of the eager docents at the museum, and then also Carl Hermans, who was Aeromobile's chief commercial officer. He gave me a quick tour of the car itself. He hit the little button to turn it from car to plane, or vice versa, actually. And then he even let me get in, which was cozy, to to say the least. So that is what you're about to hear. I have a quick tour of the car, and then I sit down for an in-depth conversation with Patrick Kessel to talk about flying cars and, you know, what they're up to. So that is what you're about to hear right now.
$1.3 million to get in here, sir.
$1.3?
Yes, sir.
Is there a payment plan?
Yes.
Okay, great, great. I'll start on that next week.
Well, I can show you the show car first of all. Would you like to get in?
Sure.
It's quite easy. Let me just show you. So you need to first hold the handle. Here you need to first stand up straight, hold the handle, and then tuck yourself down and push the little seat cushion forward. It's all carefully ergonomically designed for compact and light space, but once you're in...
Hiya.
Hi.
Patrick.
Danny. Nice to meet you.
Shall we try this?
Sure.
I think you're...
Yeah, I'm good.
So yeah, it's equivalent to a hypercar, supercar.
Right.
And maybe even a little more spacious than some of those.
And this is for the flying.
Yeah, so the controls are dual controls, obviously. The pedals convert from car, accelerator and brake to flight.
Right.
Instrumentation, very simple.
So, can you just tell me who you are, where we are, and what you guys have just shown me?
Sure. My name is Patrick Kessel. I'm the CEO of Aeromobile, and we are in San Carlos at the Hiller Aviation Museum, at the heart of Silicon Valley. And we're here for 2 weeks with the Aeromobile AM4.0, this our two-seater model. And yeah, happy to be here.
So this is, you've been working on this for quite a while. When did you start and why did you start?
I started in this position as CEO about just over 2 years ago. The company as such was founded, however, in 2010. So it's a long history. And yeah, we are now in the final stages before the commercialization.
So I know you weren't here for the whole kind of genesis, but can you talk about the history of the company, kind of what the original vision is, if that has changed, if so, how, and kind of what the plan is going forward?
Sure. So the original vision was literally to design amazing flying cars. And I think we are still very much aligned with that vision. Now, we do have a two-seater that we've been working on since the beginning. We had to go through multiple iterations of the design, simply because there literally is no flying car that you can build on from an experience point of view, and we needed to literally invent it. And so we had a first design, we tested it. Actually, all of our four iterations were literally flying and driving. Hmm. So they were real, you know, real flying tests were made. And we had learnings from all those iterations. Then this fourth iteration is really the commercial vehicle, which then now incorporates also the legal requirements, so the legislative requirements both of a car and a plane. So there was a lot of design requirements that we had to meet. And at the same time, we also have now worked extensively on a four-seater design, which is also a flying car that drives on the road and flies. And both have really distinctively different purposes.
I guess the most obvious question is why? Why have a flying car? And I ask because we've had a lot of the, you know, so-called eVTOL companies on this podcast, companies like Lilium. We've also had the guys from Uber Elevate on and Archer. And they're all going after a specific, you know, basically kind of vertical takeoff and landing, city to city or city to countryside, whatever it may be. That I understand as a kind of, it's basically dramatically expanding, theoretically, the market for helicopters. But if you can do it silently and do it electrically as opposed to jet fuel or whatever, I can kind of understand that. What is less obvious to me is, why do you need a car that also, you know, wings fold out and all of a sudden you can take it to an airport and take off?
So I think the real, the ultimate reason is comfort, and that the comfort of being in the single seat, the door-to-door comfort, because currently it's just so much hassle to travel, especially in that range of, let's say, 100 to 500 miles, where it's too far to drive and it's too short and hence inconvenient to fly. And if you look at a short flight, which may take 40 minutes, the total door-to-door trip may still be 4 hours. And you're in the car, a cab, you have to get out, go through security and all that, mingle with many different people. And it's just a horrible experience. Mm-hmm. And, you know, why do people take a taxi in a city where you have a good subway, let's say in New York? People just, although, you know, let's say an Uber may be 10 or 20 times more expensive, it may not actually save you any time. It's really just the convenience and comfort of sitting in that seat and relaxing, working, and right, whatever have you. And it's the same with a flying car. And in our four-seat ride-hailing service, we really want to offer that convenience to millions of customers, especially here in the U.S., where you just book a trip straight from your house to the final destination. It's an easy, you know, 60-second booking experience. And the vehicle comes to your house and you sit in that rear seat, a very comfortable, beautiful interior environment. And you just relax, you can work, you can play with the entertainment system and sleep, or just enjoy the view of the beautiful view at 10,000 feet.
Right.
And you get delivered at the doorstep. Whereas the current alternatives are, you know, either you drive 5, 6, 7 hours, or you have that horrible experience having to take commercial aviation. And even with private aviation, you have an issue with the switching, and a lot of the business jets are very expensive and also land just at medium-sized airports, whereas we can land at any grass strip runway because we need a very short runway. So we have a lot more access to infrastructure, which is highly underutilized. Mm. So it's really ultimately door-to-door convenience. And on top of that, we've done an extensive analysis on actually 4 million routes, and 600,000 routes in the U.S. are in our favor in terms of time saving to your best alternative within our range of 100 to 500 miles.
Right.
So basically, you also, on these 600,000 routes, you actually get a positive time saving, and a lot of them have at least a 30% time saving to your best alternative. So it's that combination of time saving and comfort.
And the four-seater would be, so it's one, the pilot slash driver plus three people.
So it's a pilot plus three passengers.
Right. And just on that time saving, you're still going to have to come to the airport and get out and do security and do all that stuff anyway, aren't you?
You don't, because we would be using small airports and airfields where you literally drive up onto the runway directly rather than going through the security.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So the FAA just doesn't require it on smaller airports? Is that
the
deal?
It doesn't, correct, yeah.
I see. And the driving experience is like kind of like a family saloon type car. It's not, in other words, it's not like, you know, zipping around. And the flying experience is kind of like a Cessna, you said. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes. The flying experience is different from other small general aviation aircraft like Cessna, Cirrus, et cetera, because our cabin is wider. It's quite a bit wider, and hence you have, it's just more spacious in the inside compared to a normal small plane. And on the road is, I would say, like a standard car. It's not designed for maximum acceleration or top speed, but really more for comfort.
Right. I was just thinking as I was looking at it, I was like, what happens if you get in a fender bender? Because I presume that means you can't fly. Is that right?
Yeah, I would say it's, I think, similar to an aircraft at the airport. If it gets hit, then you have to do maintenance or repair. So it would be the same here.
Have you factored that into your plans? And I presume you have, because it would just seem to me that because it's a car and a plane, it is just susceptible to a, you know, multiple of more factors in terms of things that can go wrong because you're out on the road and people drive crazy and there's potholes and any number of things that can affect what is still a plane. So it could lead to just a lot more kind of flights getting canceled or things going wrong just because, you know, everybody's driving in a car. Whereas a plane is like stays on an airfield. It's much more protected. It's kind of in cotton wool relative to like a car.
So how often do you actually, you know, let's say crash your car, bump into something? You know, it's a very rare occasion in the first place. So if this happens, is we have also censoring systems on that four-seater to know that this happened. So of course you do need to have repair in that case. In terms of rough roads, the vehicle has been designed to handle potholes and things like that. It has a very suspension that is capable of that. Actually, more of an off-roading suspension, because we during the takeoff actually move the suspension down by about 30 centimeters to give a bigger angle of attack on the wings. So the suspension is actually suitable for rough terrain.
Right. And so you're taking this plane / car around the U.S. I think you guys were Miami, New York, here, L.A. Is that right?
That's correct, yeah.
How has the reception been amongst potential investors? Do they kind of get it, or are they kind of like, we've already backed eVTOL company X, Y, and Z?
Of course, there's a wide range of investors. There's a category that have had looked at eVTOLs or have already invested into eVTOLs. I think, you know, there was a big hype around eVTOLs.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
everybody, like a typical herd mentality of investors, when one to invest and others will follow. I think now it's pretty clear that maybe it was too much of a hype, and we look at ourselves as actually a very good hedge to that whole future air mobility market, because we are not really a competitor in terms of to eVTOLs in terms of our range or the service. Yet we use existing technology rather than having to wait for the step improvements on battery energy density, and also you use existing, we certify as per existing certifications. So these are the which is not the case in eVTOLs.
Yeah,
we use existing infrastructure, both the road and the airstrips, which again eVTOLs need to build a huge amount of very expensive infrastructure, all the charging stations for eVTOLs and parking stations and all that. So there's a lot of barriers to mass adoption for eVTOLs that we simply don't have. And this is basically it's a new approach that hasn't been out there.
Yeah.
Nobody actually has even proposed anything like that. And so we see a lot of really interest, to explore this alternative approach. And I think the arguments are pretty sound why we believe we would be on the market much sooner and be able to scale faster, because we don't have these barriers for the scaling barriers.
Right.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And so how loud is it when it's a plane? I presume it's a different engine? I don't know, in terms of the propulsion, like how does it work when it's a car versus a plane?
Yeah, it's basically very similar to a, let's say, standard general aviation aircraft in terms of noise. It has a rear pusher propeller for the two-seater. The four-seater has actually two pusher propellers for redundancy reasons. They are electric, but the power source is an internal combustion engine for both vehicles, simply because we need the range.
Yeah.
And obviously the infrastructure for refueling is present. We can literally go up to any automotive gas station, which is great.
How big is the tank?
It's about 250 liters for the two-seater and slightly higher for the four-seater.
Right.
So much, much larger than what you have in a car.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty standard for aircraft.
Right. Who do you envision as the market for the two-seater?
Do you want to say something to that?
So this is Carl. This is Carl Hermans, recently joined Aeromobile as Chief Commercial Officer. The two-seater market is a luxury product aimed at the users of hypercars, light aircraft, yachts, and also the broader luxury market of fine art and mechanical watches and that sort of thing. The four-seater is a much broader audience, and that is designed to democratize private travel. And the company had a study by a leading global consultancy who measured very scientifically through a survey of 6,000 travelers, measured a total addressable market of $70 billion for the ride-hailing service. And that was based upon looking at the 1.4 billion trips that are made in America each year and applying a switching rate based on the survey of 6,000 travelers, a switching rate based upon the combination of price, time, and convenience.
So the 1.4 billion trips, is that long road trips or short air trips?
Yeah, it is the 100 to 500 mile range of the Aeromobile.
Got you. So would you guys operate the ride-hailing service?
No, the business model for Aeromobile is very thoughtful. We will design the product, engineering, technology, hardware, software, which, as you can see, is a marvel of engineering. And we will manage the user experience for the ride-hailing service through a proprietary app, like the Uber app. But the capital-intensive manufacturing and the operations-intensive fleet management will be outsourced to specialists in those fields.
Specialists like who? Like, what do you mean?
We're talking with one of the leading private jet fleet services.
I see. How much have you guys raised to date?
The company has invested $30 million so far, mostly through private individuals. And we are in now a Series A fundraising. And there are several scenarios of the size of the funds and the timings of the funds.
How much do you guys need?
To fully produce and fully come to market with both vehicles is roughly $300 million. But there is, as I said, phasing in that, different options. And part of the advantage of launching the two-seater soon in 2024 is when we plan to deliver those vehicles to customers, is that the cash flow from the sales of the two-seater will help the funding development of the four-seater.
The Tesla model.
Right, exactly.
So $30 million over 12 years for a first-of-its-kind aircraft is not a lot of money.
It is remarkably efficient how the company has operated, partly because it was founded in Slovakia, where costs are significantly lower than they would be in America, for instance, probably one-third. So the $30 million of actual cash invested would be more like the equivalent of 100 million if the work had been done in America.
Right. And so where is the company now in terms of you've spent 12 years to get to this point? Is the four-seater just a schematic right now?
We've completed the engineering design for the four-seater on the preliminary basis. And the next phase is a detailed engineering and then the prototype build. It should take about 2 years from now.
Right. So basically, how badly do you need the money? I guess, like, what happens if you don't raise the money on this roadshow? Is that a possibility? And if so, is that the dream over?
First of all, I think any pre-revenue company needs money to operate.
Yeah.
So I think obviously you always need to raise money to continue going forward. Of course, we have existing investors. We have already investors that have expressed now their interest, and it's just a matter of structuring the round and also finding the right lead investor who leads the round. Yeah.
Right. Is finding enough pilots to pilot this plane, is it going to need its own kind of type rating? Is it kind of like, do you see a limitation there?
For the two-seater, it really is, all you need is a standard PPL, and you can fly it, and it's easy to fly like a Cessna 172. For the four-seater service, because it's a commercial service, you need a higher degree of the license. But it's not nearly the same as a commercial pilot license for, you know, the big commercial airlines.
Right.
And as such, it is actually a stepping stone for pilots to fly already commercial, but on small planes, get enough flight experience to get to their 2,000 hours that are needed to then be a pilot for the big commercial airlines should they choose to go that path afterwards.
Right. Right, right. And how did you get involved with the company? Well, like, what were you doing before?
I am an entrepreneur. I started my first company 15 years ago, engineering, designing carbon fiber components for the automotive and aerospace industry. So I worked on probably over 100 complex development projects, from engineering to industrialization to then the serial supply. And I just was watching this industry for quite a few years, as I'm also, car and plane enthusiast, and just fell in love with the problem that we're trying to solve, that the mid-range, travel is really an issue. And, many times I would not go on a trip that would take maybe 6 hours by car, especially for a weekend, because it's literally too long and there are no good alternatives. So now I'm also a private pilot. So of course you can fly, but the problem again, if you fly somewhere, especially for like a tour, you land somewhere and then you're basically stuck there. So I just watched the company and I decided to invest in the company. Mm. And then sometime 2 years later, I actually sold my previous company, the carbon fiber business, and I stepped in as a full-time CEO.
Wow. Are you worried, though, that the eVTOLs, because the eVTOLs, I mean, they're getting better. The range has improved. Batteries are getting better. Electric motors are getting better. And there's a lot more money in that sector of the market. So, like all of these technology kind of innovation curves, at a certain point, you kind of reach parity with what you need to reach parity with. And all of a sudden, it's like, well, okay, well, that just makes sense now. I get it. Are you worried that just the wall of money that has been thrown at that sector will basically bounce you guys out before you even have a chance to kind of get a foothold?
I think now that companies come closer to their promised delivery targets within the eVTOL segment and are struggling to achieve especially the range, but also the certification status, investors are becoming increasingly aware that actually the eVTOL market is still very premature, and the claimed launch dates of initially 2024 and now they're being pushed out already will surely not come to fruition. And even if you had a product that would be certified at some point, that's very far from having a real commercial operation, because you need to put in place all that infrastructure. So I think range is one of the biggest issues. You know, you can look at the eVTOL companies out there on the market. If they had the full payload as they're projecting, then to my knowledge, they could still not actually take off and do a single mile of commercial operation as of today.
Is that right?
I mean, you can see some companies, they've done flight tests. They've put they've filled it up with batteries.
600 pounds or...
With batteries. Instead of the, let's say, 5 passengers, so you would have maybe up to almost 1,000 pounds of batteries. And they've flown, let's say, maybe 150 miles. But actually, if you do that calculation, what that actually translates into in terms of commercial operation, if you also take into account the safety time that you need in the air, then actually this translates to currently a negative commercial range. So to get to a range of, you know, 100 miles will take a very long time.
Sorry, I don't follow. So you're saying if you pack it up with the equivalent of 4 or 5 people,
yeah,
it can fly 150 miles, but so how does that equate to a negative commercial value, or basically can't even fly a single mile?
Because the current tests that have been done, basically vehicle has been loaded with batteries instead of passengers. So if you put loaded with passengers, then obviously you have many less batteries in there. And if you do that calculation and then add the safety time in the air that is needed, and I think is still being also, let's say, negotiated in the new eVTOL legislation that is also not final, then you still get to a negative range. So I do believe that, you know, within maybe some years, you get to a low range and it may be just 20, 30 miles initially. And this will, of course, go up over the time. And I think for the mission, eVTOL mission, that range may be suitable within cities or to really close by adjacent cities, but it's really just a very different mission profile from flying, let's say, 200-300 miles or even 500 miles and having the door-to-door experience and comfort. So back to your question, I think investors will be increasingly aware of the limitations of the eVTOL segment, and a lot of investors, you know, continue to be interested in the future of mobility, of course, and they will be looking at alternative ways that have less obstacles, less barriers to mass adoption. And I think we have a, you know, great solution here with a huge market that was calculated by a leading management consultancy. And we aim to have 5,000 vehicles out there on the road, 5,000 flying cars that each generate about $2 million of annual revenue from the ticket sales, which, you know, equates to about $10 billion revenue with existing infrastructure, existing certification, and even existing technology of, you know, internal combustion engine.
Right. Who's the kind of founding father, so to speak, of this company? Whose original kind of crazy idea was this?
The company was founded by two people in 2010, and one of them is an aircraft engineer, an inventor. The other person is a business strategist and visionary, and they really built the company together.
Where?
This was in Slovakia.
Right. And are they still involved?
One of them has left the company, and the other one is still a shareholder.
Got you. But is it everybody happy, or there's some bitterness around that?
Oh, I think that's everything is happy and amicable.
Right. I ask because there's a lot of, you know, famously the Tesla example, there's a lot of these companies that take a really long time to develop because it's very hard. Oftentimes the original founders get either pushed out or push themselves out over time just because, you know, it requires a different set of skills to actually take this idea and actually turn it into something that's sustainable.
No, I think there's no, you know, no lawsuits or anything that.
Yeah.
Everything was just amicably agreed.
So how much longer are you in the States?
For another month.
Right. And are you flying this thing around?
So we have two vehicles. One is a flight testing prototype that is under testing in Slovakia.
Hmm.
We follow the aviation test procedures for a new type of aircraft. And the other vehicle is a non-functional vehicle that we are just showing
the one we just saw
in the US, right. Correct.
I see.
And the functional vehicle, you can see videos, you know, online.
Yeah. Okay. Anything that keeps you up at night when you're thinking about trying to make this thing a reality?
Many things. It's definitely a challenging project. It's very exciting at the same time because it is, you know, would be the first commercially available flying car. We've been to the moon over 50 years ago. I still don't have a flying car. And also the service itself is you know, very, very innovative and new. And the challenges are, you know, on every front, there are some challenges from the technical ones, commercial ones. But I'm happy with the progress, both in terms of the flight testing and the test results that we're having on the two-seater. I'm happy that we have now completed the preliminary engineering design of the four-seater and have just announced that ride-hailing service, literally today. And happy to have traction from the general, let's say, people. I mean, we've seen, for example, on social media, when recent post was actually had more than 100 million views on that from that one person who posted it randomly, I would say. And so it just shows that there's a lot of just internal interest from the public. Anything you want to say, Carl?
Well, maybe I think I'm new enough that I can still, I still have the excitement of, you know, I decided to join the company after 20 years working in the luxury world, in the art world and luxury retail. I think this is a fantastic proposition. And everyone we meet with is amazed to see that this technology that we've waited all these years is finally real and is finally coming to market.
Right. It sounds like you guys have your work cut out. Well, look, thanks very much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And that is all the time we have. I want to thank Patrick. I want to thank Carl for taking the time. Thank you all for listening. I'd love to hear what you think of this idea. I'm sure you could probably pick up. For me, it seems like let's say it's a limited market. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I often am. But it does seem like it's an uphill climb. But they're obviously going after it. We'll see if they can raise the money. It's obviously very cool tech. We shall see. But that is it for this week. I hope you guys enjoyed the episode. I will be back next week with another one, as usual. So in the meantime, stay safe, stay sane. I will be writing about this and some other stuff in the Sunday Times. Do check that out at thetimes.co.uk. You can find me on Twitter at Danny Fortson. Email me, danny.fortson@sunday-times.co.uk. That is it. Have a fabulous week and talk soon. Bye-bye.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.